Hello, everyone. I'm Tori.
And I'm Kariana.
And welcome to God and All Things. Today, we are revisiting the world of Jane Austen with Lady Susan, which is her novella from, I think, pretty early on in her writing career. And I'm really excited to discuss this. It's been a bit since we've done any classics, really, but especially Victorian, 19th century literature and Jane Austen. So let's start off with a little brief summary about this great novella, and then we'll talk about personal experiences.
Okay, so super fun. Lady Susan, our title and title character, is a manipulative genius who strives to better her position in the world while at the same time proving her superiority over all people, especially her power over men. It's written through letters, and the reader is able to witness the story through the interpretations of various characters, all with different ideas and agendas, as Lady Susan tries to marry off herself and her daughter. But will her machinations play out to her advantage in the end?
That is the question. So, personal experiences. So my first experience with this work was actually the film, which the film is titled Love and Friendship. It's on Amazon Prime. And I thought it was really funny and cute, and they did a really great job on it. If you haven't seen it, definitely check it out if you like Jane Austen. It's a win. It's very different from Jane Austen's other stories, like very different, especially with the main character. It's epistolary, meaning it's told in letters, so there's that difference, but also we are following a much older heroine, or anti-heroine, I guess. But either way, it's very different. So I thought it was very interesting for a Jane Austen work. And then I read it a couple years ago. Yeah, I want to say it was 2 Julys ago that I read it for Jane Austen July. And I did really enjoy it. I listened to the audiobook. And then this time I listened to the audiobook again. And I just think it's a lot of fun. Like, it's a very fun story. I think Lady Susan is a fascinating character, and her relationship with the other people is very interesting. So yeah, I would say it's probably one of my favorite Austen works in some ways too, just because I think it's, yeah, it's really entertaining. And my edition, it's only 50 pages. It's really short, which is kind of nice if you just want a little flash of Jane Austen and get that writing style and stuff that she's so great with. So
her comedy, man.
Yes, she's so funny. She does so well. So really, really love it. And yeah, that's my experience. What about you?
Pretty short and sweet. Tori told me about this novella, and then we decided that we're reading it for this podcast episode. And so then I listened to the audiobook. I mean, I thought it was fascinating. I was like jaw dropped half the time I was listening to it. Like, are you kidding me?
The sass and the manipulation.
Oh my gosh.
Cleverness and things.
Yes, she really is awful. Like, you can't, there's no getting away from that. She's awful straight up. But also, it's hilarious. Yes. So thoroughly
she's
enjoyed.
She's a great fictional character.
She is.
You would hate to be around her
in
real
life. Oh my
gosh. But you would it's fun to read about her.
For sure. But yes, she would be awful to actually have to spend time with. But yeah, there's my experience.
Awesome. And I think that brings us into our gospel principle,
yes,
which is being Christ-like with difficult people. So human beings are all so unique. We have so many differences, often leading us to be at odds with each other. However, we have been counseled to mourn with those that mourn and comfort those that stand in need of comfort. Surely this includes those who we struggle to even want to be around, let alone care for. Though boundaries may need to be in place, Christ's power will enable not only individual healing, but healing for relationships when he is invited in by one or both parties, particularly with both parties. But that's the point of this, is often he's not quite invited in by both parties, or even maybe either party, and that's where things go wrong. But making sure you're the type of person who always invites him into your relationships will help them to be as healthy as they're going to be with the other person maybe not making the same decision as you are.
Yes. I mean, if nothing else, aid your own health in that relationship,
yes,
rather than being hurt or by it.
Have the forgiveness and internal healing that's needed. Mm-hmm. And also be inspired to know what boundaries are necessary versus what maybe you can handle with God's help.
For sure. For sure.
Okay, so we'll just get right into this little novella, starting with, so like I said, it's told through letters. And we start off learning a little bit about Lady Susan. She is going to visit her brother-in-law in Churchill. So she is a widow with a teenage daughter. So she is old enough to have a teenage daughter, but she probably was a teenage bride herself. So she still is pretty young. And she also just naturally looks very young, is brought up. But she is leaving this place called Langford, this house that belongs to the Mannerings. However, she's suddenly leaving it and asking her sister-in-law if she can. So it's her late husband's brother's wife that she's writing to, who she hasn't met yet. And so she's asking her if she can come to Churchill. She really wants to meet her and her kids. And we meet Catherine, who is this sister-in-law, who is talking to her mother in a letter saying that Lady Susan's coming. She's like, she's never been interested before. I don't know. And we find out too that when Catherine was going to marry her husband, Lady Susan was very against it, in large part because she would be taking away opportunity for them to inherit the money, because Catherine ended up being married to the older brother, I believe. So anyway, so yes, that is the situation. And it's under very interesting circumstances that she's coming away from Langford, because it was rumored that she was really enjoying her time there, maybe a little too much. And so the sudden departure, it just screams of scandal amongst what happened there, which we learn a little bit more about as we go along. I think it's really interesting. I was talking to Kariana about this before we started. I think Catherine is very interesting in this book because she's the one that mainly just sees through people. Like, she has a really good understanding of what people are like. We see that primarily with Lady Susan and Frederica, where she's able to pick up that Frederica seems like a good girl and Lady Susan seems manipulative. But before the book even starts, she hasn't actually met Lady Susan. She's just heard things from other people, and she knows that Lady Susan argued against her marriage to her current husband. And so she already has these bad feelings towards Lady Susan. And so even though she is in the right about her interpretation about Lady Susan and her concern in Lady Susan coming, she still is very prejudiced as well and isn't coming at it from a Christ-like perspective. And we see that throughout this story, and I think it causes more of the drama than if she had just been more, like, maybe a little bit more cautious because of what she's heard, but also a little bit more, less passive-aggressive, I guess. It sounds like she's more of a passive-aggressive type. She's not outright rude to Lady Susan, but she's very, like, will make little comments and stuff, kind of being like, oh, I thought you didn't really want to spend time around your daughter, or things like that. And it's interesting, Lady Susan's letters, that, like, the longer she spends with Catherine and realizes that Catherine sees right through her, the, like, more upset she gets, or, like, also kind of passive aggressive about things, where she's just like, oh, I don't understand what her problem is. Anyway, so it's very interesting because even though Catherine is supposed to be the good person in this book, I think it's coming very much from this Regency perspective of reputation and stuff, and not so much from actual moral standing with wanting to be Christ-like, if that makes sense, which is interesting.
Yeah, that kind of Pharisaical view that prevailed through a lot of the time period. I think, kind of like I was mentioning earlier, like, a lot of what we see with Catherine, especially here at the beginning, like, we definitely see her lose patience and kind of lash out more as she's lived in the same house as Lady Susan longer and longer. But I think a lot of it is that, like, internal issues, you know, because I get the sense, I agree, I think, like, we do see some passive aggressive remarks, but I get the sense that for the most part, she's able to kind of hold on to her, like, decorum, you know, she, like, holds on to her etiquette and, like, treats Lady Susan the way that she's supposed to treat a guest, right? And all of that. But we see in these letters to her mom, like, almost some wrath going on. Like, she really, really dislikes her. And a lot of the drama that we see playing out is actually all internal. Like, if you stop and think about what this actually looks like in real life, it's just them being normal people having normal conversations and then being so mad about it inside. And so I think it's interesting that Catherine, in lots of ways, is only like hurting herself and her mom, and then eventually her dad when her dad reads one of the letters to her mom. But like, it's their own feelings and their own relationships by not, like you were saying at the beginning, by not inviting Christ in and really trying to be Christ-like. She's just causing drama for herself and her close relations by like being so prejudiced and upset about all of this.
Yeah, and I think that shows a little bit more outwardly with her thoughts and like treatment of Frederica a little bit. Just because, I mean, she's still not, she's not like outrightly mean, but like even before Frederica gets there, we see like Frederica is actually a really good girl. She's just been in an abusive relationship with her mom. And so Catherine, like, even though she doesn't like Lady Susan, she's kind of like seeing Frederica as still a burden. Like, she kind of has the, she has a few moments where she's like, oh yeah, I've heard she kind of like is not super great either, just in a different way or whatever. Like, she kind of goes into meeting Frederica like, oh, I guess we'll see what she's like. But then like as she gets to know her, but there's, it also seems like at first there's this drive in her and Catherine not just to get to know Frederica for Frederica's sake. It almost seems like a little bit of a, in spite of Lady Susan, because she's like, oh, Lady Susan doesn't like her daughter very much. Okay. And then like suddenly she starts to talk more pityingly and like sympathetically about Frederica. And then over time does, is like, oh, she's actually a great girl. Like, to the point where she's like, I'd even want her to marry my brother, kind of a thing, which, you know, could you argue maybe part of that is because she knows Lady Susan's trying to get her brother's affections, Reginald's affections, and like is trying to spite that in the worst way possible by sending the daughter after him, maybe a little bit to start with. But I feel like by the end she knows Frederica enough to be like, no, I actually think she's great and it's good. But
yeah, I do definitely suspect that, because when she's talking to her mom about it, she's like, oh yeah, she like comes from nothing and lacks education and like all of this. She's like, yeah, she doesn't really have anything going for her, but she'd be a great wife for Reginald. I'm like, okay.
You're just trying to bother Lady Susan.
Yes, this kind of became like a battle of the women, who's more powerful and has more influence and can get what she wants. Thankfully works out in the end, but could have led to like a really unfortunate situation for her brother if she had put that pressure on him and it hadn't been the right thing to do, and she was just kind of letting her prejudice get the better of her.
Yep, absolutely. And I guess we should back up a little bit and explain a little bit more of that context. So yeah, so Lady Susan's there, Frederica, her daughter, actually gets sent to a school in London, and while she's there, Lady Susan is at Churchill and she meets Reginald de Courcy, who is the brother of Catherine, and he also goes into meeting Lady Susan with these preconceived notions of what kind of person she is. He's the one that kind of tells us, or we learn from, that back at Langford, what happened was the Mannerings, who own the house, Lady Susan ended up developing a relationship with Mr. Mannering, and Mrs. Mannering obviously did not like that. And so, and she's also just a very emotional person, so she like really exploded. There was also this issue where Mr. Mannering's little sister was going after this wealthy young man, John Martin, and then Lady Susan swooped in and took John Martin's attention from Maria Mannering, I think is her name, and redirected it towards Frederica, her own daughter, because he's wealthy and it would be really nice for Lady Susan, not for Frederica. She doesn't care about her. She just wants like to use genuinely, her as a tool.
Like, genuinely. She does not care about her.
So, and it's interesting, I'll get to it later, how things end up and how they get there, because at this point really she's having John Martin go for Frederica because she doesn't want to marry him, because she's like, ew, yeah, he's gross, but like he's also really wealthy, so how can I still get the money and not have to marry him? Oh, I'll have him marry my daughter. So that's kind of the thought process behind that. So that's all the chaos that went down at Langford before Lady Susan left. So we learned this from Reginald, whose friend was there as well and kind of saw a lot of the fallout of this. So he has these preconceived notions, and then he ends up meeting her and is very quickly manipulated and wooed by her to his family's chagrin. He very quickly changes his mind, which is another thing. Like, Lady Susan, they're all like, oh, you don't know Reginald, you don't understand him. But she's like literally right every time she says something about him changing his mind or something. And they're like, you don't know my brother or whatever. And then like literally 2 seconds later, she's proven right. And you're like, okay, well, she's a horrible person, you're right, and manipulative, but she's very good at her manipulation. She's
intelligent.
Yeah. She's very intelligent and clever, and also very good. She's, I think you could probably say she's a sociopath, honestly.
I think I could go with that.
Yeah.
She's like, mm-hmm. she's really heartless.
Yes.
Like, genuinely. Mm-hmm.
Just everything she does is actually for her own benefit. She doesn't, yeah. And she knows how to read people well enough to know how to manipulate them, right, to where they don't realize they're being manipulated. They're just pulled into it.
Right. And she has no care for the consequences or mm-hmm. their feelings or anything.
Nope, not at all.
She'll even tell lies that she can easily get caught in. Mm-hmm. And she, because she just doesn't. Like, ultimately, it doesn't matter to her.
Yeah. She's just like, when she's facing them, she wants them to like agree with her, like her, go her way.
Yeah.
She doesn't really care ultimately, like in the long term, what they think. She's right. Just like, as long as it benefits her, she'll manipulate them into thinking a certain way. And that's once she gets what she wants, she doesn't care what they think anymore.
Yeah. I wonder where the idea for her came from.
I know.
I wonder.
It'd be so interesting. So, yeah. So that's this chaos. So Reginald's starting to like her, and his family really doesn't like it. In fact, Catherine writes to her mother about the situation, and her father reads it and is very upset about it and is like, oh no, this can't happen. So he writes to Reginald and tells him, like, you'll be a disgrace. And this is another moment of just like that Christ-like, like, prioritize the relationship over your opinion, where he's like, we're gonna cut you off, da da da. And it's like, he's only been having conversations with this woman who's also like twice his age. It's not like they're super close in age. I mean, it's concerning because they've heard about Lady Susan and her charm and stuff, and like, especially in the Regency period, a man talking to a woman alone a lot,
right?
Understandable that they're having concerns. But to like jump to, we're gonna disown you and stuff, it's like, really? You couldn't just like try to figure out the situation in order to save your family?
Right.
And so, yeah, I just think that remembering to prioritize the relationship over opinions is such a key starting point to how you respond to certain situations and certain people.
His letter is rather manipulative as well, I think, because he, you know, he's like, no matter what, I'll love you and we'll respect you, and I want you to do this, like, not out of fear, but out of, like, I can't remember the word that he uses, but trust or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then he goes off and he's like, yeah, but also like, don't. Or else.
But also, if you do it, then you'll suffer the consequences, right, that I'm going to decide what they are, which is where it's like, okay, he's obviously gonna have consequences enough if she's as bad as everybody says she is.
Honestly, like, I do not wish to work on your fears, but on your sense and affection. It would destroy every comfort of my life to know that you are married to Lady Susan Vernon. It would be the death of that honest pride with which I have hitherto considered my son. I should blush to see him.
That is like the definition of just him. Like, I will kill myself you break up with me. Like,
oh my gosh.
Okay,
yes,
calm
exactly.
down. Like, that is severe manipulation. So poor guy's just surrounded, I guess, just some people who are maybe less wrong than others
and have his better interests more in mind.
Yes, very true.
But I mean, he does say, I don't know, he does say, if you can give me your assurance of having no design beyond enjoying the conversation of a clever woman for a short period, and of yielding admiration only to her beauty and abilities without being blinded by them to her faults, you will restore me to happiness. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I mean, yeah, if you're in a relationship with her, I'm not going to be happy. But he does at least give him the opportunity to say, like, tell me you're not.
What's really going on, and I'll believe you.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
But it's definitely, it's rough. It's rough.
Yes.
It's manipulative, and it is working on his fears.
Yes. Mm-hmm. No matter what he may say.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. And it's so interesting, too, with all this drama in the family where the father, like, freaks out and stuff. And then we, like, flash to Lady Susan's letters to Alicia Johnson, her best friend, and they're all like, oh yeah, he's kind of interesting. He's not as good as Mannering, but like, he's pretty interesting. And like, they're all panicking that like, they're gonna get married. And eventually Lady Susan kind of gets to that point, but it almost seems like it's out of spite and like to prove a point about her own control and power. But ultimately, like, at this point, she has no thoughts of marrying this guy. She's just like, yeah, he's just kind of fun and interesting. And she's just bored at this country house. And mm-hmm. It doesn't have Mannering, the weird, I want to say love of her life, but I don't know. Love of right now.
Yeah.
Who knows? The one who can please her the best.
Yeah. Almost like the, almost her idea of perfection in a yes. man. That's kind of what mm-hmm. it sounds yes. like it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
He like... almost, she's almost not superior to him. That's mm-hmm. like, that's kind of the sense that,
yes.
that he's like good enough yes. for her in a way.
She feels
probably if he was single, him. That wouldn't be the case.
Yeah,
I bet
true.
It's because
she likes
he's
the challenge, yeah, the out of reachness,
unattainable.
Of him, the, yeah,
upsetting another woman for him, yes. proving her superiority over that woman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I might actually be wrong to say that.
A little bit of a power play.
Yeah.
But also he is really interesting to her. Like, he actually has,
right.
like, opinions and thoughts and things.
He's intelligent enough,
like,
for
yeah,
her.
Yeah, that's worthy of my time. It's yeah. not like, because I feel like she wouldn't go for just any married guy. It's like the guy that, like,
yes,
she, especially not to this level. Like, she might flirt with married men
right
around, but like to the point where like for months afterwards she's still thinking about him and trying to arrange clandestine meetings and stuff, and even after she's married herself trying to like
yeah
have those opportunities to talk to him and stuff. Like, I think it's because yeah she actually sees something in him worth her time,
yes.
that she gets out of it. It's what she gets out of it. As soon as he stops being interesting, he's gone. But yeah, anyway, so moving forward in the plot, we with all of this drama going on at Churchill, now Lady Susan gets a letter that Frederica has run away from school and is therefore kicked out, which seems really dramatic, but there's also kind of a hint at one point that it was also because her tuition wasn't being paid. Like, the headmistress was worried about not getting paid for Frederica, and then on top of it she's trying to run away, so it just looks bad. It's bad for their reputation as a school for allowing that to happen. Lady Susan, of course, just harps on the, oh, she was running away, it's all her fault, but really it was probably she wasn't paying for the tuition the way she should have been. In fact, in the movie it does show that. It's a very brief scene where she's talking to her friend who comes with her originally to Churchill, who packs and unpacks things for her, but they're friends, so she doesn't pay her because they're friends, and that would be rude. So anyway, she's having this conversation and she literally says, the tuition at Frederica's school is much too high to even think of paying, so basically it's an economy. And so we see it's like the shortest scene, that's literally all she says, and then it cuts to the next scene. And so we get that hint there, and then in one of the letters in the books there's like a little mention about that problem. So anyway, Frederica gets kicked out, and the brother-in-law goes to see Lord Vernon, I guess is his name, goes to see what he can do, and ends up bringing Frederica back to Churchill, which Lady Susan is not really into, but it's what's happened. And so she's kind of filled Reginald's head with these ideas about Frederica just being silly and not understanding where she's coming from, and just, yeah, a very silly, naive girl. That's what she's being painted as. And the others, just based on that first interaction, don't really know what to think other than that, because Frederica just like runs away. Like, she's just very emotional and stuff, and they're like, oh, okay. Of course, we figure out, and they figure out, that it comes from a lot of abuse she's suffered at the hands of her mother, and once she gets out from under her shadow, she ends up blooming a lot. But in this moment, she's really struggling. And then to top it all off, Sir John Martin appears, this man that Lady Susan wants Frederica to marry, who's really silly, and Frederica does not want to marry him. And so it's put a lot of stress on them. And he is very silly. If you've seen the film, he is very silly.
Oh my gosh. He is the person who I would have to do the best to show Christ-like right. love to, honestly. I think out of everybody, he'd be the person who I'd be like, okay. Just be kind.
Yep. Even Frederica's like, you know, maybe I could like him if, like, he was, like, a distant cousin or... Frederica ends up reaching out. She's told by Lady Susan not to talk to her cousins about her uncle and aunt, about the situation, about her feelings about Sir Martin. And she ends up feeling like she doesn't have anywhere to turn because of that, obviously. And so she ends up writing to Reginald, just saying, look, I don't want to marry this man. And you're the only person I feel like I can turn to who could possibly, like, help my mother see that I don't want to marry him and be okay with that fact. So that causes all sorts of other drama, which leads to Reginald being like, I think he fights with Lady Susan and then is like, I'm just gonna leave, like a little boy, just showing that he's also kind of naive, like Frederica, young and a little bit childish. But he's like, I'm just gonna leave since Lady Susan is actually not the person I thought she was. And this is where we see Lady Susan's great manipulative skills, because Catherine's like, she sends off a letter. The way we find out about this situation is because she sends out a letter to her mother that's like, good news, Reginald's leaving because he got in a fight with Lady Susan. And then she writes a letter right after that is basically saying, I spoke too soon. And I guess Lady Susan had gone down and been like, just casually talking, and then threw in, oh, I hear your brother is leaving. And she's like, it's so funny, he didn't mention anything about that earlier when I just spoke to him. And Catherine's like, yeah, well, I think he's definitely gonna go. And Susan's like, well, you know, young men just are just willy-nilly going places. I bet within an hour he changes his mind. And Catherine's like, no, you're being dumb. Anyway, so an hour passes by and Lady Susan talks to him, and then suddenly he's fine again and they're good. And Catherine, of course, is very upset about this as well, that Susan, and it's like very much, it almost feels more like it's because Susan proved her wrong the fact that Reginald's staying. Like, I just feel, and I feel like too with this interaction, this is where Lady Susan starts to be like, maybe I should marry him, because I mean, he's rich and young and handsome and I can control him, he's moldable, and I can spite Catherine, who just thinks she's so superior to me when obviously I'm superior to her. So I feel like this is where Lady Susan starts actually considering, like, pursuing Reginald, which is an interesting shift to see. So once again, we start seeing them butt heads, where even Catherine's just not reaching for Christ-like poise or power in this situation. She's just trying to prove Susan wrong and herself in control of her family. So really, in some ways, she's kind of just as manipulative as Lady Susan. She just has maybe a better moral compass than Lady Susan does, and so she comes out on top ultimately in a lot of ways. And yet Lady Susan just, like, always has that one little extra thing up her sleeve that just pushes her into the superior spot as far as gaining that control, and it just creates even more contention than I think there otherwise would be. Like, I feel like if Catherine was just kind and, like, had those boundaries up of, like, I'm not gonna be manipulated by her and stuff, but maybe approach Reginald in a more sympathetic way where she's like, you know, I understand, but I also think you shouldn't just throw away a lot of the things we've heard about her and her actions, especially, like, just because she has a reason for them, like, just be careful, kind of a thing, approaching in a more sisterly way that way. I guess it probably would have saved probably a lot of heartbreak. And ultimately, Reginald, as we'll see in a second, ends up leaving Lady Susan, not due to anything his sister did. Like, it just, right. Like, things just came to a head,
the and truth he figured comes it out. And yeah. Catherine could have trusted him a lot more, mm-hmm. to see and understand, yes, rather than her feeling like she has to teach him and preach to him, and
baby him
about what is right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I really don't believe that Catherine acting more Christ-like towards Lady Susan would have actually made a difference in any of the plot. Like, if I'm being completely honest, I really don't think it would have. But it's just, you brought up, like, lessened heartbreak, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I guess in my own relationships with people, I've learned, like, as I try to just be Christ-like and to show love and stand up for what I believe, like, at no point should Catherine have backed down and been like, yeah, I mean, sure, maybe Lady Susan is okay. Like, no, she mm-hmm. knows that she's not.
Yeah.
And she's allowed to express that in kind ways, right? And then, yeah, and just love people the best that she can and leave it at that. And what I've learned is just a lot about, like, the peace and comfort that that brings, you know, instead of, like, you can sit there and, like, worry and stress and pull your hair out and mm-hmm. say, this isn't okay and this is wrong and I need to fix this and put pressure on people and run the risk of ruining those relationships. Or you can say, I'm going to love all of these people to the best of my ability. And sometimes that means praying really, really hard for God's help in loving them. But yes. I'm going to keep putting in that effort and keep doing it and be kind to them as the best that I can and repent when I mess up. And I just know that in my life, I've been blessed with, like, with peace in that. And rather than feeling like I have to pull my hair out all the time, I feel like, you know, I disagree with this person, but they're going to make their choices and it's going to work out however it works out, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
And even if everything stays the same, and in this case, Catherine gets what she wants ultimately, but even if things go wrong, like, wouldn't you rather them go wrong and be able to feel peace and comfort in it, trusting mm-hmm. in God and in his plan and in eternity,
yeah.
rather than feeling like the world is coming to an end and miserable and like nothing is right? Like it's just,
right.
I really do think this story is such a good example of the blessings of that inner peace. Because mm-hmm. again, everybody's going to do what they're going to do. And Lady Susan is probably a sociopath, like
yes.
you said. So you're not going to change anything mm-hmm. by being Christ-like, except yourself and the relationships with others. You know, Catherine does kind of cause some heartbreak within her parents
yes.
and between her and Reginald mm-hmm. that could have been saved by her being a little more willing just to show love. And again, mm-hmm. and I don't want to imply, I really like the way that you put it, because I don't want to imply that she shouldn't say anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I believe yes. very strongly in standing up for what's right and saying what needs to be said, but in a kind and Christ-like way, mm-hmm. you know, just,
yeah.
you know, like he did. Sometimes we forget that Christ-like is an actual, like, example that we have examples
yes.
of, you know,
mm-hmm.
it becomes like this word that is just like, whatever, but how did Christ teach people? Like he was kind and he was loving and occasionally he said hard things, but surrounded it with love at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, because Christ even interacted with, like, lawyers and stuff who came to him with questions, but he could sense that it was coming from a place of trying to manipulate him.
Yeah.
Or twist his words. And many of those questions may have been presented in a way, probably were, if they were trying to manipulate him in a way that seemed like they were genuinely interested or whatever, but they were really just trying to catch him in his words. And it wasn't like he was best friends with them or like hung out with them all the time. And maybe some of them kind of sought him out so that they could try to twist his words and stuff. I'm sure that happens sometimes. But like he still was just very polite with them and did like kept, he said what he meant. He didn't try to like smooth things over or whatever or avoid the situation. He just, you know, had the spirit with him, said what he felt was necessary to say, and then had those barriers of like, I'm not going to fall into their traps, but I'm also not going to treat them like they're trash or be passive aggressive with them or anything. He's just very assertive of like, this is the truth. That's what it is. And I wish we could have seen a little bit more of that in the Bible so that we can relate it to some of these experiences better. But I mean, we get enough that I think you can see that for sure. And that's something I agree, yeah, that it just brings the greater peace. Like just running through a little bit more into the plot, the drama ends up, the setting moves to London, where Lady Susan, Reginald is kind of like pursuing her, but Mr. Mannering's there, as well as Mrs. Mannering, and there's all a whole blow up basically where Reginald figures out that she's seeing Mr. Mannering and that she's not actually friends with Mrs. Mannering, even though that's kind of what the argument she was giving was. And so it's this big blow up, and then it just kind of separates them ultimately. And in this moment, like, Reginald's heart is broken and he doesn't really have anybody to go to, because even though his family was like, yeah, you shouldn't trust her, they kind of feel like the type of people who would come back to him if he goes to them and say, I told you so, and like not be very sympathetic or helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But like, even though this is a situation where, yeah, maybe he was a little bit blind, he should have had boundaries and he didn't, he was maybe a little bit, a lot of bit naive about certain things, ultimately, like, he's really hurting probably at this point, and we don't see any letters about it or anything, but he's probably heartbroken and hurting because this woman he came to trust and really actually care about, potentially even to the point of wanting to marry her, ends up being a fraud and someone who is manipulating him and who is doing things that he finds very immoral. And now he's just, like, not getting married to her, and he's, like, alone again, and he doesn't have a family that would be able to support him and help him. And I think that's where the Christ-like poise and Christ-like approach would have helped so much, is when that person is ready, he could have had someone to go to. But because of the way they were treating both Lady Susan and him, ultimately he didn't have that relationship that was already there that he could rely on. And so part of us being Christ-like, I think, is not just, like, to prove that we can be, but also to give space for opportunities where in future, perhaps when the other person is ready, they'll have a place to come that can bloom into a wonderful relationship that will be positive for both parties. And I liked just being able to think about how that would have been different. That ending would have felt a little bit different had at least some of the characters turned to that Christ-like way of being instead of just being, like you said, kind of pharisaical and focusing on right and wrong over relationship.
That reminds me of a Holland quote that I really, really love. That is, "And if those children are unresponsive, maybe you can't teach them yet, but you can love them. And if you love them today, maybe you can teach them tomorrow." Mm-hmm. And, you know, just like you're saying, you build that love up first, and then when they're ready, you can teach them if and when they're ready for that.
Yes.
Just like God. Them. That's what God does with us.
Absolutely.
He lets us get ready and then teaches us what we need to know. And we should be able to do the same thing
mm-hmm.
at an imperfect level.
Yes. At a slowly improving level.
Yes.
So, yeah, I really like that. I do think, though, that they end up turning to a more Christ-like method of thinking and being when it comes to Frederica, because we see that Lady Susan goes in. Frederica's been staying with her aunt and uncle this whole time while Lady Susan's been in London, but out of spite, Lady Susan goes and picks Frederica up to take her away from there because she doesn't want to reward Catherine or anything for anything that, or anyone else for anything that's happened with Reginald and stuff. So she takes Frederica away under the pretense that she wants to get her more educated and teach her to sing and stuff. So they're both in London for a bit, and then we basically jump to the stories like, well, we don't have any more letters, but here's basically what happens. And so we see that the aunt and uncle end up going and getting Frederica back from London. And again, Lady Susan just proves her power by being like, I don't know if I can let her go. They go and ask for Frederica to come back, and she's like, I don't know if I can let her go. I've actually come to really like her, and I really rely on her a lot now and stuff. And then she, like, turns it around and is like, but do you think she's gonna get sick? Like, just kind of, and in the book it doesn't show all the details. It's just basically like they were able to take Frederica away, but Lady Susan kind of manipulated it to where it was because of what she wanted and not because of what they were wanting necessarily, so she can prove that she's still on top. In the movie it just has it, yeah, like where she's like, oh, I think Frederica might be getting sick with all the city air and stuff, and they're like, oh yeah, for sure. And so then she lets them take her. just has to make sure they were coming and doing something that she wanted them to do anyway, but she just had to make sure that they knew it was because of her, like, her power. She's in control, not them. It's so charming in a book, but in real life, you just want to pop
really
her in the mouth.
It really is horrible. Yeah.
So bad. And then we end up with two marriages. So Frederica and Reginald do end up getting married. Frederica's kind of hinted that she's liked him, and Catherine has mentioned wanting Reginald to marry her. Like I said, largely to spite Lady Susan at the beginning, I think, but as time goes on, it seems like they really get to know her and appreciate her for who she is and end up, I think, also actually having empathy for her and being like, she's such a good person. She doesn't deserve the treatment she's had from her mom, and she deserves an escape from that. And if
she
that
really
means
is
she
pitiable.
Needs to marry, yeah, exactly. If that means she needs to marry my brother or our son, then that's worth it to us because she deserves something happier and she'll make him happy. So that's good. And then, surprise, surprise, Lady Susan finally decides that actually John Martin's, I think it's James Martin. I've been saying John Martin this whole time,
it's
James Martin. That's so embarrassing. I apologize, everybody. But anyway, James Martin, Lady Susan ends up marrying him because he's rich, basically. And I like in the film, it doesn't have this in the book, but I think it's a really nice add-in where she's like talking to her friend. Lady Susan's still thinking of Reginald and pulling him back in. But her friend is like, well, who knows how long it will be before Reginald gets all of his inheritance. Like when his dad dies, it sounds like he's going to just live forever. So like you could do that and wait around and who knows what's going to happen and have your daughter be married to James Martin and have all these riches that you have to live off of. Or you could just marry James Martin and have all those riches right away yourself. So up to you. And she very clearly goes for that route. So, and then it's also hinted that she's pregnant, not when she's supposed to be. She's pregnant a little earlier than she should have been, which James Martin doesn't understand because he's kind of dumb. But we as the viewer, I don't think it's hinted in the book, really.
I didn't get that impression.
Yeah, I didn't either. Sometimes, though, with Jane Austen's language, it might be there and I'll notice it another time I read it. But in the film, it's like the next morning after they get married, she's like, I'm pregnant. And he's like, oh, wow. And you are pretty sure it's Mannerings. So two very different worlds. But I guess everybody got what they wanted in the end. So.
Yep, in the end, everybody wins.
Yeah, so it's a very, like I said, it's such a fun story. And yeah, an interesting look at what can happen when nobody is really inviting Christ in and how that really can create an even worse scenario because the relationships that are so uplifting and strengthening can be really more damaging or even just less helpful, but even to the point of being damaging ultimately when those relationships need to be relied on. In Elder Gong's talk from not this last conference, but from October this past year, he talked a lot about ministering, and he talks about how we have been asked to help Christ seek that which was lost, bring again that which was driven away, bind up that which was broken, strengthen that which was sick. We may entertain angels unawares as we make room in his inn for all. And I love that. I think that really reflects in this book with Frederica. She's an angel ultimately in this story, and they thankfully end up seeing enough that they're able to show her that kindness and treat her the way she deserves to be treated after all of this time with her mother. But they may have missed that if they had been so stuck in their dislike of Lady Susan and hadn't been willing to reach out to Frederica. And so I'm grateful for that part of this story as well, because I think it does show that sense of Christ-like love. Yeah, ultimately, inviting Jesus in is what's going to make the best difference for any relationship that you're in.
A couple of unsung heroes that I wouldn't mind bringing up. So Frederica, you mentioned a little bit. She's just kind of the victim of the book, I would say.
Yes, number one victim.
Yes, she. I don't know that we necessarily get enough of her voice to say much, but she does strive to obey her mom, right? Mm-hmm. She finds that loophole, but when her mom says, don't talk to your aunt and uncle, she doesn't, right? Mm-hmm. So she's striving to obey. She's doing her best. She acts out on occasion, but we're literally talking about a 16-year-old girl who's been neglected and abused her entire life.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was bound to happen.
Yes. And running away from school, isn't the worst way that it could have manifested itself.
Yeah, for sure.
And then she comes to live in the same house as her mom and just, silently suffers, right? Mm-hmm. And she even, she's falling for this guy that her mom is obviously developing a relationship with, but she still, like, very humbly goes to him as the person who has the most influence with her mom, trying to get out of a different engagement. Like, she's mm-hmm. not even trying to get in her mom's way and, like, mm-hmm. impose her will in any way other than, don't make me marry this other man. Uh-huh. But yeah, so I think she's really good in that way. The other person I want to bring up is Charles, who is Catherine's mm-hmm. husband, the brother of Lady Susan's late husband. He is described every time as this, like, he wants to see the best in people. He's just very, in the movie, they depict him as a little more, like, just kind of moldable and doing whatever anybody else says.
Yeah.
I like the description in the book of he likes to see the best in people, you know? And I mean, you can call him easily manipulated, sure. Like, I mean, yeah, choosing to trust people and to see the best in people, sometimes you're going to be more easily manipulated. Like, it's true. And that's just kind of a risk that is part of it, you know? But I think that he does a really, really good job. And I think he matches, I didn't think about this when I was saying it, but he goes along really well with what I was talking about earlier of, like, not really struggling with any of it, you know?
That's true.
Like, he doesn't have to worry about rebuilding relationships or anything being broken down or anybody mistrusting him or any of that. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody's going to be worried about Charles saying, I told you so, because he never would. He's just, so I think he is he doesn't have a voice in the book at all, but I think that he fits very well that, like, just trying to be Christ-like to everybody, and everybody, like, there's no reason to not respect him unless you're Lady Susan and disrespect him because you don't have any respect for anybody, but that's a different case.
For sure.
I don't know if that makes sense, but I think that he just deserves a little bit of recognition for being the one person in the novel who just stays very, like, she's probably good the whole time, you know?
I agree with that. I'm glad you brought that up because I feel like even in the film, even though he's just kind of moldable, I think he's also, like, he never really is manipulated by Lady Susan.
Okay.
Like, he does a lot of what she asks and is willing to, like, work with her and stuff. But, like, it's never, like, she's, like, manipulating money unnecessarily out of him. And, like, the fact that he didn't end up married to her at one point. Like, I mean, I don't really know the timeline of when, like, her husband died versus when Charles got married to Catherine. I want to say that he got married to her after his brother died. And when Lady Susan was...
I
want to
say the opposite,
actually.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Because don't they mention months? Her husband has been dead for just months.
Oh, maybe they did.
And Catherine has kids.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I was just trying to think of, like, how... Yeah,
I'm not exactly sure.
Anyway, so, like, but still, like, trying to manipulate him in a flirty way. Like, clearly she has no problem with flirting with
everyone.
Men.
Yes.
So, like, there's nothing like that. And he's in a position where he could help her a lot. And he does. But you never feel like he's, like, in her grasp. And even, like, Catherine, who's complaining about her brother being in Lady Susan's grasp, never says anything about her husband, even though her husband is, like, being obliging and helping out Lady Susan. She never once
She's not worried about him.
Yeah, she's not concerned about it. And so, even though he has this Christ-like approach and he is very peaceful and giving Lady Susan the benefit of the doubt where other people don't, he still clearly has some sort of boundary there. And maybe it's just a boundary of personality. Like, he's just, like, he cares, but he's also kind of apathetic about what's going on. He just kind of deals with what's right in front of him and isn't, like, too concerned about things. Like, he doesn't seem to be too concerned about Reginald. He treats Frederica well, and, like, that's the other thing, is he treats Frederica and Lady Susan the same. Like, he just is, like, nice to both of them and is, yeah, does what needs to be done, basically. It's a very interesting dynamic, and I think you're right that he represents the most Christ-like person in this story in the way he approaches things. And I think you can see it with the way everybody talks about him as just like, oh, he's just a nice guy. Like, you get the sense that all of them feel that they can rely on him, which is kind of a lot of pressure, but if he can handle it, then you know?
And that's great.
It's coming from a good place, so that's great. All right, a little bit of a shorter episode today, but I did want to end with some further thoughts on ministering and just loving people as Christ loves. Specifically from Elder Gong's talk, he says, "We may tire physically, but in his service we do not weary in well-doing. We diligently do our best, do not run faster than we have strength, but trust, as the Apostle Paul teaches, that God loveth a cheerful giver. Jesus Christ ministers, angels minister, followers of Christ minister to one another. Let his name be known through our ministry." And I think that's something we should take into every relationship. It's hard. I know we both, I mean, within my own family right now, we have some issues with some difficult relationships and things where people are really struggling. And my parents have suggested to those who have needed the advice with these difficult relationships, they've said to stand your ground kindly. And I think that's a really good way to go about being Christ-like within relationships with difficult people, is stand your ground in a kind way. And we see Christ do that over and over through the scriptures. And we see in this that kindness, that dash of kindness, rather than passive aggressiveness or bitterness underneath, really just provides a place where people can feel safe. And that's the kind of relationship setting we should always seek to create. All right, like I said, pretty short, but thank you so much for listening, for watching. We hope you enjoyed. Please don't forget to subscribe and like or leave a review, depending on where you are consuming this. Also, be sure to follow us on Instagram at God and All Things. We would love to see you over there. And if you're interested in what I'm reading just in general, you can check out my other channel, Good Strong Words, on YouTube. Thank you again so much for watching. We hope you are having a wonderful week. Keep remembering to see God in all things, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.